You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when you turn right, but you turn all the way.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Oh, thank you so much for joining us today. I am Dr. Dawn Karima, and I am honored that you've chosen to be part of this great day. And I'm especially happy because our guest today is one of our very favorite people in the whole wide world. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Yes, I am Dwayne Brayboy. I am Tuscarora from the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina and Robeson County, North Carolina.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's always a fun time and an honor to be here.
Oh, we feel the same way. We love to have you join us. So what is on your heart today? What are you thinking about?
Oh, today, all sorts of things I've been thinking and have been in my head today. One of the things I'm presently working on is I'm helping the, I don't know if you've heard of the Mountain to Sea Trail in North Carolina?
Tell us about it, please.
Okay, it is a trail that they've decided to create in North Carolina from, I believe, as far west. I believe it begins in Clingman's Dome. And then goes all the way out to the shore. So what part of this project is that they are speaking, or not so much speaking, but they are bringing about awareness to the indigenous people or non-indigenous people, areas or sites of significance, historical significance and such. Mm-hmm. But because, you know, this was once all our land, they can't go anywhere in the state without being on native land, you know, so everywhere they go, every stop along the way, they are acknowledging the original inhabitants of the land. So I've been discussing this with the director of this project and about Tuscarora place names and village sites along the way and such. So I've been thinking about that, and I've been helping them with that, and that's been it's been an interesting project. And you know, I've, of course, along the trail, you know, I've given this director contacts, you know, for different other Native nations that I know, my contacts in these other places. I'm like, okay, well, over here, you know, this is going to be somebody else's territory. And, you know, you'll want to contact them, you know, reach out to this person over here. So, yeah, hopefully it would be nice. It will be nice to see all of us, our people, acknowledged here in the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, congratulations on being involved in such a good way with this project. I am so interested in several things that you said about this project, and I want to start with this one. You know, land acknowledgments are really popular now. Have you noticed that? Like every conference, every, you know, someone is supposed to come and acknowledge the land that they're on and who the original inhabitants are. What happens when we make our presence known on these kinds of trails and these kinds of sites?
Well, for my nation in particular, the Tuscarora, it is so meaningful to us because the acknowledgement brings about awareness. And because, you know, my people tend to be, you know, it's a short snapshot, a little small snapshot of my people here is like the English showed up. We had cultural conflicts. We had a war. Decidedly, we lost. You know, some people went north. Most of us stayed here in North Carolina. We migrated to present-day Robeson County and hid out in the swamps. And so we've just kind of been there, you know, ever since. And we're a closed society for hundreds of years.
Sure.
And so because of that, because we, there was, I've read accounts of when my people first migrated to our current home, that there were some angry warriors who were still angry about the outcome of the war and about our reservation, our land and stuff being taken from us. And so there were some angry young warriors who would go out and raid the European settlements. And but we knew our ancestors, the leaders knew that this was our last fallback. You know, we really had nowhere else to go. And it would have been so easy for the settlers to come wipe us out that we couldn't afford to have angry young warriors raiding the European villages. So they would say, you know, they would shun them away. That was the only real protection that we had or insurance that we had. So if somebody did something, a warrior did something awful, attacked people or whatever, they were putting our survival at risk.
Oh, wow.
And so they would be shunned and sent away. And so this fomented a sense of a culture of quiet among us. And we didn't rock the boat. We knew, you know, and that today, that mentality is still there with my people. It's like an echo of hundreds of years coming back. And, you know, I see that. There are so many who just we've been conditioned for hundreds of years to not rock the boat, don't stand up. Of course, some of us have. There was the BIA building takeover in, you know, 73 and, you know, all that. But by and large, we learned to stay quiet for survival. So because of that in the modern world, the current times, so many people don't even realize that we're there and that we've always been there, or at least, you know, here in this colonial state of North Carolina. You know, people, non-natives that I've, since I moved to the western part of the state here, non-natives I've spoken to, they ask me about my heritage, and I say I'm Tuscarora, and they're like, where are they from, you know? And well, we're from Eastern North Carolina. And so then they know the Cherokee.
Yes.
And pretty much that's it. And like there's no other Indians here to them. And so what these land acknowledgments bring is awareness, some very desperately needed awareness. And speaking of, there was our public relations director for the nation had sent me a copy of one of the local newspapers, the Fayetteville Observer, where there was an op-ed from some non-Native person who had acknowledged us.
Oh, wow.
You know, and we were thinking, this is huge. You know, here are these non-Natives acknowledging us, and we don't know this person. And, mm-hmm. you know, so being acknowledged like that is validation of our very existence.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is a fabulous answer. Thank you so much for that, because it's encouraging, it's uplifting, but it's also informative. And I'm listening to, again, the power of being recognized, the power of speaking out, the culture of quiet. I understand as a survival and a wise move in many, many places and many situations. But what does the culture of quiet do to mental health?
There's been a devastating toll that culture of quiet has had on my people.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people in my nation who, when I'm not the personality type. I'm not the warrior who's going to go burn the villages to the ground.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's not me, but still I'm not quiet. I've told people for years, we've got to speak up. We've got to assert ourselves, because if we don't, we're just going to continue to just be in the background. People won't know who we are. They won't acknowledge that we're even here. We'll never be considered for things in the future. And I see just this look of defeat in some people's eyes. Like, what can we do? We can't take a stand. You know, I'm like, actually, we can, you know? So that culture of quiet has had taken a toll on my people.
One of the great dangers for us as Indigenous people, all tribes, all nations, worldwide, is erasure. That
yes.
we're actually removed from history books, or incorrect history is taught about us, or we don't have any representation at all in popular culture or academia. Do we ever erase ourselves?
Yes. 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 There is a, you know, we Tuscarora here in North Carolina, we have a women's a cappella group mm-hmm. called Ulali.
Oh, yeah.
And you know my cousins, Puda Faye and Jennifer Kreisberg.
Mm-hmm.
There's Sunny, who is also in the group, but she is Apache and Yaqui. In Ulali, Puda Faye and Jennifer are Tuscarora.
Yeah.
And they have a song that touches on this topic called All My Relations.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, in fact, I showcased that song on our website and mm-hmm. made a video for it mm-hmm. of just photos and video footage of us Tuscaroras here in North Carolina for that video. But yes. There, the culture of quiet and the self erasure. Those people who I've seen the defeat in their eyes, like they feel like that we have no option to take a stand, to assert mm-hmm. ourselves. I've noticed that those same people tend to be the ones who shun the old ways.
Yes.
The traditional ways.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be the ones who don't see the merit in learning our language.
Mm.
You know, basically self-assimilation, you know, And it really is a situation in someone's mind and in their heart and in their soul that has to be corrected. Jigwari Wakwasnehadnya is our word for decolonization, which means we are going along restoring our matters to their proper state.
Oh, wow.
And that is what I feel is so, that's what I try and instill in all of my people, from the fist in the air warriors down to those who are self-assimilating. You know, I've got the same message for all of my people. But yes, you know, I've often said, you know, hey, it's the 21st century. If it's not okay to be Indian now, it's never going to be okay.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Whenever I talk to you, it's like food for my soul because I am so, so blessed by everything you are saying. And, you know, I want to say to everyone who has ever kept our indigenous ways or people alive, thank you. You know, the culture of quiet had a place because it did keep people alive in order to have families and you know, we're still here. It was a survival tool. And the fist in the air warriors, we need them too. We need the people who walk the old path, but we need the people who understand the digital age, you know. And so I think that's why all my relations is so important, because everybody has a place in the circle, and it's an equal place. And when you just said, I love your word for decolonization, I love that. I absolutely am. That's it. That's exactly right. But there's another piece I want to put in there and just see what you think. You know, so many people who rejected the old paths, that was a function of subjugation, defeat, colonization, survival. But it was also a function of the old paths being demonized, right? When people said, oh, you know, those ways are evil. And people thought, oh, I don't want to be evil, therefore I won't stomp anymore, or I won't do these things anymore. And I think one of the greatest things we can do now in our decolonization is tell people that, you know, all the Creator's ways are good.
Yes. There's a word and our term in my people's culture down home that's a root worker. Mm-hmm. And here's an example of what we were just speaking of. Mm-hmm. Now, my great-grandmother and her mother, so my great-great-grandmother, I know as far back as my great-great-grandmother, and then my great-grandmother and down were all medicine women. And there was a period of time in the during the termination period where there was just a lot of pressure to assimilate, for Indians to assimilate at that time. And there was this rift in my family because my great-grandmother, she was a medicine woman. She was a root worker, but her brother, he married into a family who were very much assimilationists, and you know, they called her a witch because she could heal people, because she could heal herself. They called her a witch, and it caused this rift in my family that the cracks are still there today, or actually the separation is still there today in my own family. But it's over terms like this root worker thing. And, you know, down home, it's like right now, if you say that somebody is a root worker, you know, that's synonymous with witch. And I've tried to reclaim this in my time, in my lifetime. I've tried to reclaim this word, like, you know, I've healed people. You know, that's one of the things that I do. I'm with the medicine. That's my Tuscarora name, Runaguache. Medicine lays with him. I'm from a medicine family, and I'm Bear Clan. Bear Clan is the medicine clan. Mm-hmm. I'm doing what I am supposed to be doing in my culture.
Absolutely.
And I try to explain to people that, yes, I healed you. You had a virus. I healed you. You know how I healed you? Let me tell you about these roots and such that that healed you, you know, to try and get people's minds away from the assimilation, you know, to reclaim this word that working with roots is how we stayed healthy and survive for millennia.
Yes.
But because of the assimilation, they think that, you know, root worker is synonymous with witch.
I really appreciate
that. I'm working on it.
I really do, because that's life-changing. So what happens when you do share that with folks? Like when you do, just break it down, you know, like and say, this is how I healed you. And I healed you with roots that the Creator made. I mean, He gave us this message.
Right.
You know, what happens? What's the response like?
I will say that there have been people that have really begun to see the light. And see the wisdom and the simple knowledge that, hey, these are roots that come from the earth that Creator made. You know, these roots just healed me. How can that be bad? You know, I've seen the cognitive dissonance, like,
yes.
You know, oh, root worker, but hey, those roots just healed you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, I've seen a little bit of both, but, you know, progress. And that's something that I'm pretty good at is keeping up the good stuff, keeping up the good work.
Yes, you are. Absolutely. Well, I just think it must do terrible things to a person's mental health to have to reject portions of who they are. You know, you can't have your identity, your skin color's wrong, your hair's not right, the way you pray isn't right, the way you speak isn't right, the way you think isn't right. And the only thing that can be right is if you literally morph into somebody else, just literally change into somebody else. I would think there would be a huge disconnect because assimilation is violent. In those kinds of cases, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. You know, I will say that I'm not on Facebook anymore. I've been on Facebook for years now. But when I was when Facebook was new, when I was on Facebook for some years, you know, there were these essentially talking circles in a way.
Yeah.
They weren't laid out that way, but that's really what they were. They were like these electronic talking circles on social media,
yes.
Where we would all discuss things. And then I would see, because they were on public pages, I would see people join the page or join the conversations where we would have these ongoing discussions about being Indian in the 21st century and such. And, I will tell you that I, because it's public and, you know, anyone from anywhere could join, I saw a woman one time, who was very much Indian.
Mm-hmm.
She came from a well-known Indian family, carried a well-known Indian family surname, and look very thick-blooded Indian. But she denied being Indian because in her assimilation, she was convinced that being Indian was synonymous with being a heathen or a pagan. And she was denying her Indian blood because of this. And that was significant for me, when I actually saw an Indian who really couldn't deny being Indian, deny being Indian because of assimilation, I'm thinking, this is a problem. This is a bigger problem than what I thought. So that inspired me to do the things that I'm doing now. It wasn't the single catalyst, but it was definitely fuel along the way.
Thank you for doing the things that you're doing now, because it's not always about right now. You know, when the kind of person that you're describing has children and grandchildren who will not receive their culture in a good light, who will be raised behind the eight ball, you know, something's wrong with you from the day you were born because you come from this heritage or this culture, is the message they will be sent. And you quickly have to somehow change this and become convoluted, and your gifts, your talents, your powers, whatever you may have, your medicine, your magic, if your parents and grandparents, in addition to society, in addition to history and teachers and all of these other forces, are all agreeing that there's something wrong with you from the womb, that's hard work, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, sad but true.
Yes. And so those kinds of heart attitudes, you know, I think about a relative to whom I dearly love this person. I love them. And they love me. No questions asked. But I remember one time I was heading out to Stomp Dance. And they said, you know, I was raised that you can either be a Christian or you can be an Indian. You can't do both. If you're going to be a Christian, you have to give up being an Indian. And I was stunned. I couldn't believe I was hearing this from this person. And this wasn't like an anciently old person or out of touch person or anything like that. This was, you know, a relatively young person with a responsible job and a reasonable amount of sense. And they said that to me, and they're like, you know, you have to make a decision. You're going to have to decide whose side are you on. I said, well, that's easy. I'm always on God's side. I'm on God's side if he's at the Stomp Dance. I'm on God's side if he's at the church. I'm on God, I always, just wherever the creator is, I'm going to try to line up with him in any such situation. And they were like, oh.
Yes, I agree.
I never thought of it like that, they said. Right? I mean,
yeah.
I never thought of it like that.
It's like,
you know?
Like Chief Black Elk said, the Holy Land is everywhere.
And everywhere.
You've seen me throw that around for years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of my favorite quotes.
Yes.
From an Indian leader. And, yes, the Holy Land is everywhere. So, you know, wherever there is land, there is Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel the same as you, you know. I mean, I have only known in my lifetime one atheist Indian.
Yeah, I've never met him.
And
I don't think I've ever met him.
From what? Right, and he was from out west, and you know, enrolled with his tribe and everything. But he came around on the powwow circuit, and I met him at a powwow down home. And I was really shocked when he told me that he was an atheist. You know, because I'm like, wow. I mean, whether we are traditional and find Creator in our longhouse, or whether we are Christian and find Creator in church, we acknowledge Creator, you know? You know, the denomination is immaterial. You know, just Creator is everywhere. And we know this, and we're, you know, we're very animistic people, you know, Tuscaroras, you know, we just really do believe, I mean, we're very superstitious, and we do believe in, you know, everything has its own energy or soul, you know, and And that's all creator, you know? Creator's just in everything. Mm-hmm. And so, that's why I'm one who I really, it doesn't affect me how Indians get down spiritually as long as it's in a good way. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they find creator through Christianity or through the longhouse or however, that's just something that we all tend to agree on. And so that belief in creator, the acknowledgement of creator, is important. And that's a unifying factor, actually.
Right. Yes, that's right. I'm a Christian. Jesus is my Lord. I love Jesus. I really do. Don't always like all the other stuff that people attach to him, but I love Jesus. And Jesus is tribal.
Right.
He is tribal. And I absolutely believe. I mean, he's never said one word to me about my traditional clothing or stomp the. I mean, Jesus has never said anything to me that would make me walk away from my language, from my culture, from my traditions. And he didn't walk away from his. You know, he was very much a part of his culture. He was very much a part of his tribe and nation. And I think he understands us. I really do. Much more. And he's been weaponized. He's been weaponized as part of colonialism in ways that he never behaved that we know of when he was present in the earth.
Right.
And so one of the things that comes to mind right away with what you're saying, too, is that lateral violence is a really powerful tool of colonialism. It's terrible for our mental health as people, but it's also part of colonialism.
Yes.
Right. Like if Case... You know, there's no overbearing religious or political figure to remind you to be colonized. They have deputies. There's folks that are, just volunteer to sort of police other native people and run to tell you that, powwows are wrong or don't go to a stomp dance or don't speak your language or don't do this or don't do that. And so the colonizer doesn't even have to be in the room if these folks are willing to do that work. So what do we do with something like lateral violence as we are decolonizing?
That is a really serious, heavy topic. And is ongoing, needing to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us are addressing it, I really do believe that, the changes begin with yourself. And so I think that's why in my community, I think there are so many people who trust me.
Yeah.
And that really is one of the biggest badges of honor that somebody like me could wear is trustworthiness.
Yeah.
And I think that part of that, why that happens, is because people know that I'm not a judger.
Right. You're not.
They know that I'm not going to move against them or shun them, if there's no lateral violence on my part. I just won't come out against other people.
Right.
Add to fuel to that fire of lateral violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always been that way in hopes that, I would serve as an example in that, and that other people might see the merit in not being a laterally violent person.
Yeah. Well, I trust you with my life and more importantly, the life of my children. And I know that your heart is not to judge, that you're kind, that you are fair, just, balanced, truthful, all these things from the old paths. And I thank you for all of that. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about how we're decolonizing our mental health, and we're going to have hope because every day, we are all able to bring these wonderful ways into each of our lives. We'll be right back.
The hardest thing to do at times is to make changes in your routine. Don't let that hold you back.
Wait a minute. They told us we had an oil shortage. Well, yeah, I guess in a way we are running out of oil.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Tia.
And I'm Heather.
And we are Three Voices.
You want this drum over here? It's clear. You got Gilbert over here. You got LeBron over here. And guess what? We talking about it.
I'm trying to get over the dog whistle politics thing because I can't hear it and dogs supposed to hear it. So who hears the dog whistle?
Your opportunity is now to get up-to-the-minute information, great entertainment, and stimulating talk programs on your computer. Yes, I said your computer. Just log on to TalkTainmentRadio.com. Click Listen Live to hear a program. The blogs and podcasts are up and running. TalkTainmentRadio.com can also be heard on your cell phone.
Yes, I said cell phone.
TalkTainment Radio. We go where you go.
I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Hi, everyone. Al Roker here. As a guy with his own catchphrase, I appreciate that after 75 years, Smokey's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But I'm filling in because there's a lot more to report. Like when it's dry or windy. Be careful burning yard waste, because wildfires can even start in your neck of the woods. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
We are strong, and we'll get through this together. But these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit WeAreBroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Presenting great moments in the history of 1-800-FED-INFO. For years, Americans have turned to 1-800-FED-INFO for government information. Make your own great moment. Call 1-800-FED-INFO. It's government made easy.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something. Something serious. I know you love me. I know you like using me wherever you are. But I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road. But I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Let her believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back once the world forgave you.
I absolutely love this conversation because I absolutely and dearly love this guest. Would you please reintroduce yourself to us?
Yes, I am Dwayne Brayboy. I am Tuscarora from the Tuscarora Nation of North Carolina in Robeson County. And I am Bear Clan. My Tuscarora name is Runiquachan.
I'm so thankful to be having this conversation with you this morning.
And I with you. Thank you.
Oh, isn't it wonderful? It is. It's just wonderful.
Yes. Good medicine.
It is. It really is. This morning, I have been watching Killers of the Flower Moon. And
ooh.
Yeah, right? Everybody watch out. but I wanted to share with you a portion that really made me think of the important work that you're doing and the importance of decolonizing our mental health and beyond. There is a scene at the very beginning of this stunning epic movie where they're burying the pipe. They're giving up the old ways. The Osage people say that they're burying the pipe and they're leaving the old path behind. And from that moment on, their children will be receiving a colonial education and they're going to pray in a different way. And it's a very dignified and touching ceremony. And then people begin to cry. people actually start to cry, as if losing the pipe, losing the old paths, is losing almost a family member, you know, something, someone that they love very deeply. And people are sobbing. People are, you know, they hug the pipe, they're crying, and all of this. And even the fact that the children are not involved in this ceremony, they're outside looking in, because they're going to be educated and they're going to pray in a different way. And they're literally putting an end, saying, we're going to leave these old paths behind. And to me, that scene was absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, the whole film is filled with heartbreaking trials and traumas, yes, and crimes and just, you know, wow. But that moment when people are separated from their ways, their language, their culture, traditions, the ways of praying that their ancestors had, all of it, they're divided from it. Then there's this liminal space. Like, there's literally a liminal space where an enemy of people, which isn't based on anything like skin color or phenotype or any of that, it's based on the fact that these are people who come in with bad hearts and bad intentions. But they bury their old paths, and then there's this space where other people can sort of slither in and do a lot of harm to that nation and that community. What happens to tribal people without our history, without our language, without our old path?
We wither. We become like trees without leaves. And I'll make this very personal for you.
Okay.
There was a time in my people's history where, you know, there were, and this is something else about my nation that a lot of people don't know, is that there were two Tuscarora nations here.
Oh.
There were the northern villages. I mean, we were all one nation, I should say, but there was just two different political bodies. And I parallel this to people who have a difficult time understanding it. I'm like, well, it's like North and South Carolina, right?
Right.
Both Carolina, but there's just North Carolina and there's South Carolina. We understand that concept. And it's the same principle. There are the Northern Tuscarora villages and there are the Southern Tuscarora villages led by two different chiefs.
Okay.
And politically, they were really about the same. Linguistically, there were just a couple of slight differences. And today, in modern Tuscarora, we have pieces of both of those linguistic differences between the northern and southern villages, because at this point, we are all, those who went north and those who remained, you know, they are mostly southern village people up north, but there are northern village people there. I've heard stories about there being Brave Boy ancestors up there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then there's us here who are predominantly northern village people, but like my eighth grandfather, John Brave Boy, he was from the southern villages. He was from the village of Gadehnu, which is our word for Cyprus. There's that. But during that time of colonization, the state, the colonists with the state, they had kidnapped and then further demanded more hostages.
Oh.
Of Tuscarora children and women, and so they forced our chief at the time to be neutral, or as neutral as possible, and they made us all these promises. You know, if your people, these northern villages, just stay neutral, you know, we will reward you. You take up our ways and we'll make you great like we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did. And even in 1864, there is a quote from an uncle of mine, George Lowry, and it was recorded at the funerals of his three sons, who were killed by the Confederate Home Guard.
Oh, no.
And his three sons had been kidnapped because, you know, my Tuscarora people, we didn't get involved. It was a little bit like Two-Row Wampum. You know, we didn't get involved in the white man's wars, and we expected them to not bother us. So we did not fight in their civil war. But the Confederate Home Guard, who are a very nasty bunch, they would kidnap Indians, and usually men for this purpose. And it was, you know, they had kidnapped some Indian men and sent them down to build Fort Fisher, North Carolina. And so these three Lowry men, you know, they, their families pleaded with the Confederate Home Guard to let their men come home for, you know, holiday ceremony. And so they, these three were brothers, you know, they were allowed to come back home. They were escorted by a particularly nasty man with the Confederate Home Guard, a bad person, very bad. And so along the way home, this Confederate Home Guard man, he stopped, he tied them up like cattle outside of a saloon, went in, got drunk, and they were all, these three brothers, they were tied to, you know, tied like a horse out in front of the saloon. And so he came back outside drunk, and he killed them all.
Oh, no.
Killed all three of them.
Oh.
So my Uncle George Lowry, in 1864, he gave a speech at their funerals. And I don't have the speech before me right now, but it was along the lines of, when the English first came to our lands, we treated them kindly. And we helped them. You know, we helped them learn how to live on this land. We gave them food, you know, and we helped them whenever we could. And they told us that if we took up their laws, if we took up their language, if we took up their religion, that we would prosper and be great like they are. And now we get no justice, and that in a land where we were always free. That is the story about the answer to your question there.
Wow, what a powerful answer. Thank you so much for sharing from your heart like that, because that is the perfect answer to that question. And so now, when we look at all that has happened and everything that all of our tribes and nations worldwide, because when I say indigenous, I mean all over the world, the planet.
Right.
We've got to have answers for now, for our children and grandchildren and nieces and nephews. All of this, everything, that story you just told, everything we've talked about, everything we've been through, everything our ancestors survived, was for one purpose, and that's the seventh generation. That's the children, the grandchildren, the nieces, the nephews, the godchildren, the cousins, the ones that are young now, the future. Help us with that. How do we decolonize the future?
Right. And again, it all starts with each person, each Indian, each person, indigenous person, wherever they are. They, the responsibility is on them to make the changes, to learn their traditional culture, You know, it's kind of like I tell people that colonization didn't erase us. It just interrupted us. And so we have to pick up the pieces and move forward together, shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm. We have to do that. We have to figure out where we left off before we were so rudely interrupted.
Yeah.
We have to learn our languages.
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn our cultures, learn our ways of worship and spirituality. You know, we have to relearn all these things and then take it and move forward together. It can't be one person.
Right.
And the response, this sort of grave responsibility can't be put on one person or a few people. If the future of an Indian nation hinges upon the participation of a few of its citizens, mm-hmm. well, then they might as well just pack it in and call it quits, because
wow.
you know, it can't be that way. It has to be everyone on board, moving forward together.
Absolutely. And so let's do that. Can you give us some practical steps that we can take to, I mean, I think one of the biggest steps we can all take is to start to decolonize our mental health, really. I mean, become healthy, well people with strong, sound minds, good minds, right?
Yes.
And I think that's a tremendous first step. I mean, maybe we can't do everything, but we can do something. So what are some practical steps we can take right now?
Yes.
Because I do think, go forward is a big part, too. Go ahead.
It starts with the individual, you know.
Yeah.
I've said before, strong individuals build strong families. Strong families build strong communities.
Mm-hmm.
Strong communities build strong nations. It all starts with the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, there's a lot of ego that has to be put down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know there are a couple in my nation whose egos are just completely untethered, absolutely untethered.
Oh, no.
Thinking that they've got all the right answers, and they really don't. I mean, if they had the right answers, you know, then okay, well, you know, it's still not the right way, but, you know, at least they've got the right answers. No, they don't have the right answers, because it's mostly all egocentric. You know, their answers are all, follow me, I'm the leader. You know, that's not the way. You know, the people choose the leader. No one demands to be the leader. And so there's that. I'll tell you something that I'm planning on doing, which helps answer your question.
Wonderful.
Is that I'm actively planning right now a Tuscarora conference for...
Wow!
Yes. You know, it's going to be... I don't have an exact date yet. I'm trying to line up a venue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got Chief Cecil, you know, he's offered this before. You know, he's got some contacts down home, so we may end up at a nice venue. But I've just decided that, you know, COVID, you know, we're exiting the COVID phase. People are socializing again. You know, we're having ceremonies and socials again now. And so COVID interrupted our progress for a few years.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not getting any younger. And so I have been thinking for a while now, you know, how can I share all of the knowledge that I have amassed over a lifetime?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I talk to people, you know, I talk to people in person. I talk to others on the phone. I've talked to some on social media, which I'm not on social media right now. But, you know, I talk to a lot of people and communicate with a lot of people. and relay and share all the pertinent information that I know. But then I'm just thinking there's all these other really important aspects of our history, of our present, that could inform our future. Some information about tradition, different traditions, customs, language stuff. You know, I'm going to, of course, going to end this with a language class. So even if after the conference, everyone else wants to just leave at that point, you know, anyone else who wants to stay for a language class is going to be welcome to do that. So I'm going to be setting aside some time for this. But this is a way that I feel I can help my people keep going, you know, give them more fuel to light a fire with.
Wow. I am
that
so excited.
One way that, yeah, I think that, that this is a way that I think that we can help our individual nations. And of course that goes for anyone in the world who's in a similar situation. So, you know, you find those. It's like me, you know, when I was younger, I rarely had friends who were my own age. Most of, mm-hmm. you know, my friends when I was young were much older than me because I always valued learning and, you know, I would hang out with the elders and learn from them. That was always very important to me. And so, you know, that's something that I always suggest to people. Get in the company of people who know. You know, if you want to know about your people's history, find the right company to be in, and they'll tell you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes with elders, you know, and I'm getting into that elder phase, you know, where I'm, you know, but elders aren't, and I've explained this recently, you know, elders aren't like vending machines all the time.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It feels a little disrespectful to approach an elder just and expect to metaphorically push a button and get all the answers you want. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, elders, you know, they've lived through some things that, again, the culture of quiet.
That's right.
And to stay quiet. So sometimes it takes a little bit, and they are human after all. So sometimes it just takes a while, you know, but put yourself in the right company and you'll get the answers that you want.
Mm. You're always good company, and I'm so thankful to be here.
Thank you. So are you.
Today. Oh, this conversation is amazing for me, and I thank you for it. I'm always so blessed to be in your company and so thankful for you and what you mean to our lives and what you share. I really want to encourage our friends that are listening. This is our moment. The future is now. It's now. Everything the ancestors prayed for, worked for, survived for, built for, here we are. It's time. And so I absolutely encourage all of our friends who are listening to take those steps that you're suggesting and move forward. Move forward. You know, it's good to survive, but even better to thrive, right? And
yes.
I think it's a wonderful opportunity for all of us to act on what we've heard today. Thank you so much for joining us today. You are such a treasure to us. Every time we get to visit with you, it is a marvelous, marvelous moment in our lives. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's always an honor to be here.
I already can't wait till you come back. I'm already excited about our next conversation. And to each of you that joins us for these conversations and shares on social media and donates and helps to make this podcast possible and continue, we're so thankful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to our networks and platforms. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our friends. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you very, very, very much. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'll look forward to our next conversation.
You've got the power. the world's greatest radio, TalkTainmentRadio.com.